It is lame as fuck. It is lame as fuck to look at a woman and be like, the only reason why she got this is because she's pretty and young. Some of you are starting to sound a lot like men. I'm just going to say it. Like, I'm sorry.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, who is 28 years old, bitch. I turned 28 on March 5th, just a few short days ago, and I am loving it. I love on birthdays when people are like, what do you feel like? Do you feel any different? And everyone's like, ha, 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 expecting you to say, no, I feel the same, because that'd be so silly. But I'm here to tell you that the second, the moment, the millisecond that I turned 28, I felt it deep within my bones. I knew that I had turned the sexiest age ever. Okay, I have been looking forward to being 28 since I was 14 years old. I just feel like when I was growing up, and taking in information, learning things, okay? When I was in my season of realizing things, I felt like everyone cool was 28. 28 was just like the hottest, sexiest year to me. I raise you this, Lady Gaga art pop era. Oh, how old was she? 27, 28. Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go, okay? 28, sexiest year. Sexiest year, hottest year, here I am. And fuck a 27 club. Oh, and what about that? All right, I am feeling so good. I'm feeling so 28. And I'm thinking that this year is going to be a year where I bring back cringe in a major way. Okay? I'm talking, we need to go all the way back to where we used to be.
Ooh, and it's all right, and it's coming. Oh, we gotta get it right back to where we started from.
That's exactly what I'm doing this year. During my 28th year, I intend to become the cringiest version of myself yet. I've been talking about feeling inspired by my younger self, wanting to take a page out of the book of my teenage self. And this year, I just feel like it's time to bring it full circle. She wanted to be me, okay? She wanted to be 28, and I want to be her, bitch, okay? I want to be so cringe and so blissfully unaware, unconcerned about what is cool or not cool. I was talking to my friend Macy about this the other day, and she brought up the era in which we would go to the movie theaters, see a awesome 3D movie, groundbreaking, simply never been done before, okay? Get me in that theater with those little plastic glasses, and I will enjoy myself, and I will leave a trendsetter, okay? Because I'm pocketing those bitches, and I'm popping out the lenses, and then I'm going to show up to school wearing my 3D glasses, repurposed sans the lens, for a trend that is going to overtake the entire school for the next whole year, the next whole calendar year. That's all we're going to do is wear 3D glasses with the lens popped out. Let's talk about that, all right? I want to embody the level of cringe it was to be like, this piece of plastic is fucking important. This piece of plastic is fucking groundbreaking. And I'm going to wear them and start a trend that ripples across the whole fucking country, okay? I want to be in the room where that happened. Wherever the first 12-year-old that popped out those 3D lenses and said, look, guys, this is fucking sick. Wherever that first happened, that is a room I'd like to be in. That's a room I'd like to replicate during the 28th year of my life, all right? The theme this year is being as cringe as humanly possible and knowing that that sincerity, being earnest, is the sexiest and coolest thing you can possibly do. Cringe is in. I'm saying it here and now. It is so in. We are so back. And we need to be looking for more of the lenses out of 3D glasses type ways to live. All right? Is that making sense? Is it penetrating your skull? Because if it did, we're aligned. And if we're not, you're behind. The trends are here. They're happening. Cringe is back. Get with it or you're out. You know, I really accidentally brought back a birthday week for myself this year, yes, I will be obnoxious. But it's a kind of obnoxious that only impacts me, right? Like, I'm not forcing anyone else at gunpoint to celebrate me for a week. I just celebrate myself for a week. I don't need you, bitch, okay? I actually prefer my birthday week to be more of a solo activity. But I did accidentally sort of set up a birthday week for myself this year, or really, I guess it was sort of coincidental the way that things worked out. The Oscars were on March 2nd, which was a Sunday, the beginning of my birthday week. I threw a little Oscars party. It was beautiful and gorgeous and so much fun. And I have so much to say about the fucking Oscars. So you just, let's put a pin in that one. And then I was invited to go see All Nighter, a new play with like an absolutely stacked cast. One of the girlies from Sex Lives of College Girls is in it. One of the girls from Bottoms is in it. So good. Such a great show. If you have a chance to go see it and you're in New York, I absolutely recommend it. I believe they're running until like mid-May. So if you have a chance, go get tickets. Go head out and see that show. Then I went to the spa all day on my birthday. Had a nice little relaxing day with some of my friends. Today, I'm going to go see Mickey 17 at the movies. And then I'm going to come home and Lady Gaga's new goddamn fucking album comes out at midnight. By the time you're listening to this, Lady Gaga's new album will already have been released. And you better be listening to it. And you better have streamed it in full. And if you haven't, you are no friend of mine. And I mean that with my whole chest. Okay? We are not friends if you did not listen to Mayhem in full. That's a requirement of being here in this space. All right. Turn off this podcast and go listen to Mayhem in full and then come back to me. All right. Or really just do that by next week, because next week we're going to absolutely talk about everything. So if you haven't listened to Mayhem in full by next week's episode, I'm going to be really mad at you, dude. I'm going to be really fucking mad at you. And then I'm doing a little birthday dinner for myself on Sunday with a big group of my friends. Like, what could be better? What could be better than this, okay? Oscars, me time, Lady Gaga. I am set for life after the week that I've had. My cup is just feeling full to the brim. Full to the brim. I'm overjoyed. I'm so happy to be here. Vibes are so good. And honestly, I feel like the Oscars really set the tone for the week, starting us off beginning of the week with something to really rally behind and get excited about. I felt good about the way that the Oscars ended up shaking out. Some surprises, but most of like the awards that I knew or I had a feeling were going to go in directions that I didn't want them to. For example, Best Original Song and Best Supporting Actress. I knew that both of those were going to Emilia Perez beforehand. So I feel like I just accepted it within my bones and was like, you know what? Whatever else happens, happens. These are the two things I'm willing to take L's on. Those are the two losses that I will concede in advance, because we can't defeat Emilia Perez in those categories. Unfortunately, I wish that we could have. And honestly, I feel like I enjoyed most of the other nominees. I may not have loved them. You know, like I didn't love A Complete Unknown the way I loved Anora or The Substance or A Real Pain. There were some nominees that I was like mid on, but I didn't hate any of them besides Emilia Perez. Emilia Perez was the only nominee that I was fucking offended by, you know? So once I conceded the two categories that I knew that Emilia Perez was going to get and just accepted that the winners were going to be some of these other ones. Now, obviously, I'm going to have my preferences. I'm going to have my favorites. But for a lot of the categories, there was like multiple options that I was going to be feeling good about, that I wouldn't have been mad about. All right. But obviously I'm rooting for who I'm rooting for. But to a certain degree, like the nominations are more the thing that I'm going to get fired up about, because obviously a lot of my favorite movies of the year didn't get any nominations. So by the time we get to the show, like I've already processed a certain level of disappointment and disagreement that I have with the Academy. I'm working with what's left. And looking at what's left, I'm going to have my opinions. I'm going to have my thoughts. I'm going to feel sort of middle of the road, maybe less passionate about some of them, because these are a lot of my like mid-tier movies of the year. But overall, looking at the award show and all of the predictions and what actually won, I felt pretty good about how things ended up shaking out. I wasn't personally all that mad. Kieran Culkin won Best Supporting Actor. We knew he was going to. And thank God for that. Because the second I saw A Real Pain, from the moment I walked out of that movie theater with my friends, I was like, he's going to be nominated and I think he's going to win too. I just knew. It was one of those performances that I left and I saw that movie in November. So I had seen a whole year's worth of movies at that point. I watched his performance and I felt so immediately sure that that was the best performance I saw within a supporting actor all year long. No doubt in my mind, it was the best. So seeing him win was fantastic. Was super happy with that one. Looping back around to the Emilia Perez wins, obviously they won two. They won for Best Original Song, and they also, Zoe Saldana, won for Best Supporting Actress, which we accepted, and that's fine and whatever. But do I think that it is interesting and fucking stupid that during neither of the times that a member of the Emilia Perez cast or crew got up on stage to accept an award, nobody up on that stage bothered to mention trans people. Seems like maybe that would have been important for your movie that centers around a trans experience. May it have been a good portrayal or not. In the political climate we're currently in and all that the Trump administration is doing to disrespect and encourage discrimination against trans people, like, you'd think that that would have been like one of the more important things for you to touch on in your acceptance speeches. But no, not a word was uttered from those people on the Oscar stage about trans people. And I think you're fucking cowards for that. Deeply. I think you are cowards. And I think that fucking sucks. It's like my hate for this whole production just keeps getting more and more intense. Not only was it a shitty movie, not only was the movie bad, you know, but then we have all the drama that comes out after the fact. Carla Sofia Gaston's tweets, the accusation that Fernanda Torres's team was concocting the Emilia Perez hate to further her own campaign. And then to see them accept the awards and not acknowledge trans people at all, like, you bitches are pissing me off at every turn. At every turn, at every corner, with every piece of information that I learn about this production and the people who worked on it against my fucking will, I dislike it more. I thought it weren't possible. Against all odds, I thought I already disliked it the most that I possibly could. The universe finds a way to allow me to dislike it just a little bit more. All right. The universe allows me to experience the depth of my hate in a way that perturbs me to my core. And the one saving grace about all of this is that past this point, I never have to talk about Emilia Perez ever again. Once my mouth shuts on this Oscar season, all right, I will never have a reason to utter the words Emilia Perez ever again. For why? Oh, what a relief that is. And you know what? Perhaps the joy, my biggest joy of the night, was seeing I'm Still Here defeat Emilia Perez in the International Best Feature category. Cause fucking yeah. Like, that feels, for people that haven't seen one or both of the movies, I have to express to you that putting I'm Still Here and Emilia Perez in the same fucking category is like putting, I don't fucking know, like, Silence of the Lambs versus Herbie Fully Loaded. It's like, let's take this masterpiece, this absolute masterpiece, and compare it to whatever that is. Honestly, that might even be a bad comparison because, to my knowledge, Herbie Fully Loaded fucked. You get what I'm saying in terms of vibe, okay? You have something that's like a masterpiece versus something that was like a dinky little a car that's alive movie. You know what I mean? Maybe this was a bad comparison. It is egregious to compare these two films. I'm Still Here was fantastic. If you haven't gotten a chance to see I'm Still Here and to see the kind of knockout, breathtaking, earth-shattering performance that Fernanda Torres delivers, I urge you to. I urge you to because it is one of the best performances I've seen in a very long time. I was struck by it. But God, we needed something to take down Emilia Perez. And I knew that I'm Still Here had it in her. So thank God, in the Best International Feature category, I'm Still Here saved us from what would have been the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm not exaggerating. Best actor going to Adrian Brody. This was as predicted. And deserved as well. I thought he was great in The Brutalist. Obviously, I had criticism for their use of AI, but multiple things can be true at once. The Brutalist is still a really fantastic film, despite their use of AI. And I think that we can critique The Brutalist and critique the choices that they made, the corners that they cut on production, and also recognize that there is a lot of talent, and Adrian Brody gave a great performance, all things considered. So I wasn't mad about it. Would it have been my pick? No, I would have picked Colman Domingo to win, but fine. Adrian Brody wins, fine. My thing with all of that, though, was he gets up on stage to accept this Oscar, and that man had no idea what the fuck that he was going to say. He gets up there, and first of all, he is talking so goddamn slow. Every word that exited his mouth, he's like, so this is quite crazy because I am so touched. And he was talking slow, saying a lot of things that I was like, okay, where are we going? What are we doing? Like, let's keep it rocking and rolling here, Mr. Brody. And then he's just trailing on and on. It's not even like what he was saying didn't make sense or that it was not meaningful. I was like, all right, cool. It was just taking him so fucking long to spit it out. And it wasn't like a prolific enough or fantastic enough speech to even warrant giving him that much time. Like, if he had come prepared and had like shit to say, and he had a speech that he was just trying to get out, and then the music starts cutting him off and he's like, please turn it off, I've done this before, I need to say this, and he had like come prepared to get it all out, that would be one thing. But instead, I just felt like he waltzed his ass up there, had no idea what he was gonna say, wasted a whole lot of fucking time talking in circles, and then was kind of an ass about it and was like, no, all of you guys are gonna sit here and listen to me continue talk about nothing and hear this bullshit speech that I didn't prepare whatsoever for a full 5 minutes and 30 seconds. Meanwhile, they're giving the people who win for animation or visual effects, makeup and hairstyling, the shorts, like, you give those people a grand total of like 15 seconds to spit it all out and give each other a chance on the mic. They fully cut the mic out on one guy for Dune, I think it was, where there was like three of them up there and they let two of them speak, and then fully cut the mic out on the third guy, and they weren't taking too much time. Meanwhile, they let Adrian Brody go for 5+ minutes saying fuck all. I can remember pieces of pretty much everyone else's speech besides his. It was that packed full of nothing. And I just thought he was a real ass about it. He was a real, just kind of a douche. And like, if he had come prepared with a speech of like things he wanted to say and was like on a mission and was passionate about it, I would have been all for a 5 minute speech. Yeah, tell them to stop playing you off. Sit there, say what you have to say, like put your foot down. You earned it, whatever. I'm all for it if you actually have something to fucking say. He did not. He had nothing to say. He was just being a douche. So I hated that. I was rolling my eyes. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. And then Hulu committed a crime against me that was simply unspeakable, and I will be figuring out a way to get back at them. I don't know how yet, but understand that I'm brewing on it, that I am sitting here and I'm thinking about it, and it's all I'm thinking about. Hulu, you should be very afraid for when I figure out what the fuck I'm gonna do. All right, that wasn't a threat, and also it is. Right before Best Actress, as they're announcing the nominees for Best Actress, the Hulu stream glitches out and shuts off entirely and is like, stream over. Thanks for watching, but the show is over. All right, everybody, I'll see you later. You can go home now. Nothing more to see here. Literally in the middle of as they're announcing the nominees for Best Actress, about to announce who won, whole stream shuts down and it's like basically the timer's up. It looked like it was as if they had set a time frame for the stream, like, oh, it's going to be live from 7 to 10:30. And then the second it struck 10:30, the shit ended and it was like, it's over, as if the Oscars were ever going to finish at the time they say they're going to fucking finish. I was watching it happen in real time at my Oscars party. I fucking guests sitting here with me and we all are like jaw on the floor, scrambling to find a fix here so we can watch the final few categories, the thing we've waited all goddamn night for. I was just sitting here like, how could they let that happen? Like, actually, how could Hulu let that occur? Because this was like the first year, I think, that Hulu was streaming it. So you could, if you had a, you know, a basic Hulu account, you could watch the Oscars just on streaming. To fuck it up that badly is like quite prolific. And I was so mad right as it was happening. I was telling my friends, like, look up on Reddit. Like, did this happen to everyone? Is this like an everyone thing or is this an our device thing? And we just got fucked individually. No, it was fucking everyone. The whole thing shut down. That is insane. That is literally insane that they didn't anticipate the Oscars going over or plan better or do a workaround. I don't know fucking anything. It seems crazy to me that that would even be like on the table as a possibility of something that could happen while watching a stream of the Oscars. The next day, I was literally on all of Hulu's social media feeds refreshing, being like, I actually need them to issue a formal apology because that is how mad I am. Because you know what I had to do when Hulu's stream stopped working is I had to pay $84 something ridiculous like that for YouTube TV so I could watch the final category at the fucking Oscars. I was so mad. So mad. I'm hosting a party. I've waited all night for this. I'm gonna watch the categories as they fucking come on. I want to see it in real time. So I paid $84 for YouTube TV just to watch who got announced for Best Picture. Dude, I was so mad. I was so mad. I'm still so mad. I feel like Hulu should refund me the $84 that I had to pay for YouTube TV because they fucked up. That is so stupid. And they should refund my Hulu subscription for the month because they fucked me. They fucked me royally. And I will never forgive and I will never forget. Hulu, you are on my shit list now, babe. For real. For fucking real. I couldn't believe it. I'm still gobsmacked about it. Fuck you, Hulu. Fuck you and all your little buddies, all right? I've had enough. You need to send me my money and give me a little kiss on the fucking forehead for how bad you fucked me. I'll never forgive you for this. I literally was about to go on Instagram being like, I'm going to commit homicide. But then I was like, I don't want to be accused of anything. I'm not actually trying to... All right, everybody calm down. God, I can't threaten companies anymore. What the fuck? So anyways, I paid $84. Turned the TV back on right when Best Picture was about to be announced. And then we had to get my friend who saw who won Best Actress on Twitter to get up in front of the room and announce Best Actress to us after the fact so that we could have like the full experience of like, who's it going to be, not knowing and getting it announced to us. But God, you robbed me, Hulu. You fucking robbed me emotionally and actually. And it's fucked up. And I hate you. So let's talk about Best Actress. Because I have some words for some of you. Best Actress. Your nominees were Cynthia Erivo, Fernanda Torres, Carla Sofia Gaston, Demi Moore, and Mikey Madison. Obviously, everyone was predicting Demi Moore leading up to the Oscars. Because she had won a lot of the... award shows that came before it. Fernanda Torres did win one, but it was a different category. And then Mikey Madison won as well. The day before the Oscars is when I started being like, I feel like it's actually more of a toss-up between Demi Moore and Mikey Madison than people think it is. And I was saying this because I had a real feeling like Anora was going to sweep. And if Anora won Best Picture and Best Director and Best Original Screenplay, I thought that it would be quite weird if Mikey Madison didn't win Best Actress. If Anora is sweeping all these other categories, it's going to get best picture, it's going to get best director, it's going to get all of these wonderful things. It would kind of be crazy to me if Mikey Madison didn't also win for her performance. And I was feeling really confident that Anora was going to sweep, which is also what I personally wanted. For best actress, I was predicting Demi was going to win. And my personal pick was going to be Fernanda Torres. I've said this. I thought that Fernanda Torres was a wonder. She was fucking electric in I'm Still Here. She was my personal pick for Best Actress. But Anora, I'm Still Here, and The Substance were all 5-star movies to me. I loved all three of those movies. I loved all three of their performances. Fernanda is my personal pick of the bunch. However, if Demi won, if Mikey won, I was going to be happy no matter what, because those three movies were 5-star movies to me. So here we are, Best Actress, drum roll please. And the winner is Mikey Madison. And my initial reaction to learning that Mikey Madison won for Best Actress was to scream in excitement for her. Like, I was just so stoked, despite the fact that I got the prediction wrong and she was not my personal pick. I was still so excited to see Mikey Madison win because her performance as Anora was one of the best of the year, hence why she is nominated in this fucking category. Same cannot be said for Carla Sofia Gaston, but we're just gonna ignore that. But like, Mikey Madison was nominated for a goddamn reason. I was so happy to see Mikey win. And honestly, I think I figured most people would be happy with this outcome too. Like, yeah, Demi was incredible. The Substance was incredible. I am an OG Substance truther. You guys know that. But I just figured that like Anora is also a very heavily loved movie. Surely people are also happy with this result. But I feel like I logged onto social media afterwards, went on Reddit, was scrolling through Instagram, watching through people's stories, just seeing what the people had to say. Then I saw an absurd amount of people, like an absurd and disrespectful amount of people being like, fuck this. Mikey shouldn't have won. Demi was snubbed. And God, you guys, I love The Substance and I loved Demi Moore's performance, but I disagree. First of all, I think a lot of these takes came from people who are not like movie buffs and didn't watch all the nominees. And I only say this because I saw several people admit to only seeing The Substance and just loving it so much, being like, oh, I only saw The Substance, but Demi Moore was fucking incredible and therefore she was snubbed, even though they didn't watch Anora or I'm Still Here, which in a way it makes sense. If you didn't see it in theaters, there's no way for you to have seen it unless you were going to purchase the movie, right? Like, Anora's not on streaming. I'm Still Here is not on streaming. The Substance is on streaming. So I get it if you've only seen The Substance. However, to take it to the degree of being like, Mikey Madison didn't deserve this, Demi snubbed, when you didn't even watch the movie, is like kind of insane. That is like kind of crazy. All right, I loved The Substance too. I loved Demi Moore. She was wonderful. And also, I think that if you saw Anora and saw I'm Still Here, you wouldn't be as mad as you think you are, because these are three incredible women with three incredible performances. We don't need to be all up in arms about this. Like, it's sincerely not that big of a deal. But then I saw people starting to compare Mikey winning over Demi to being like the plot of The Substance, which, honest to God, I think is one of the dumbest things I've seen in a long time. I'll be honest. When I was on Reddit and I saw people saying that shit, I was like, oh my God. Critical thinking is so fucking dead, bro. Like, it is so fucking dead. Mikey won because she had a fantastic performance. Don't discount another woman's success because the woman you liked better didn't win. It's not like Demi Moore lost to someone that was undeserving. Mikey Madison had an incredible performance. That is why she won. It is lame as fuck. It is lame as fuck to look at a woman and be like, the only reason why she got this is because she's pretty and young. Some of you are starting to sound a lot like men. I'm just gonna say it. Like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry if I'm calling you out right now. But like, it is really not a great look to be like, this is the plot of The Substance. Mikey Madison, a very talented, very deserving actress, winning an award that she very much deserves. And because the actress that you favored for the win, who also would have been deserving of it if she won, it just didn't go that way. Because you favor her to basically be like, Mikey only won because she's young and hot. That's not hitting the way you think it is. I'll be honest. Number two, the Oscars have long been a show that favored legacy. So Demi would have been the outcome that was most expected and was the most expected, not Mikey. And three, Demi's loss of Best Actress does not deny the current momentum that she has in her career because of her portrayal of Elizabeth in The Substance, right? The nomination was the incredible part. When you are nominated for an Oscar, granted, there is one person in this category that I am ignoring, all right? But how it's supposed to go is we're honoring the like five most prolific performances of the year. Demi Moore being nominated was the moment that would have mattered, not the win. A major point in The Substance is like a commentary on how opportunities for older women in the entertainment industry dwindle the older that they get, which is not what's happening here. Demi Moore was just honored on like the highest level for her performance in The Substance. She defied the odds. She has won many times throughout this award season. Like, what are we talking about? And to be honest, you guys, if you were gonna try to make the argument that anybody was robbed here, which I don't think they were because everyone did an amazing job, but if you were gonna make the argument that anyone was robbed, it would not be Demi Moore, it would be Fernanda Torres. Demi Moore got many an accolade over the course of this award season. Fernanda Torres did not. But again, I believe that the nomination is the part that matters here, not the win. This is not the plot of The Substance. You are being a freak towards another very deserving woman who had a knockout performance this year. So maybe let's just chill out a little bit. Mikey Madison, I am so goddamn happy for you. You are so deserving of this, and I can't wait to see Mikey Madison win more Oscars and continue being an incredible force to be reckoned with. I love to see a woman this early on in her career doing so goddamn well. And then we get to Best Director and Best Picture, of which I was really rooting for Anora and Sean Baker. And luckily, all of my wildest dreams came true because Sean Baker won for Best Director and Anora won for Best Picture. I was screaming and shouting, okay? I stood up. I was out of breath. I was like, oh my God, yeah, let's fucking go. Let's go. Anora winning Best Picture, Sean Baker winning Best Director. I was so fucking excited. Seeing Anora, a movie with a $6 million budget, win up against movies that have hundreds of millions of dollars in budget was fucking incredible. It is like such a massive win for indie filmmaking, and Sean Baker is like such a fucking champion for indie filmmaking. I have continuously been so inspired by him. Throughout film school, when I learned about his films, the more I watch of them, the more I love them. And really following this award circuit closely, watching all the interviews, hearing what it is that he had to say, I was so continuously struck and inspired by his sort of philosophy on indie filmmaking. It was so deeply exciting to see a movie like this win, and I am loving what this means for like the future of lower budget filmmaking, of indie filmmaking, the possibility. I just feel like it opened a fucking door, and that is so exciting. I have like a deep admiration for Sean Baker, for people who do it all. And Sean Baker, obviously he won best director. He also won best editing and best original screenplay. Sean Baker is the editor for Anora. He was a screenwriter for Anora, director, producer. Like Sean Baker is a do it all kind of person. And I am constantly in like deep admiration for people like that. I love people that are, you know, have their hands in every bucket and are just like very involved in their craft. I love that he's a champion for the little guys. I love that in all of his movies, he'll have like one or two recognizable actors and everyone else that's on that set is either a non-actor or an actor that has only had small roles in the past. To me, that really shows his chops as a director, that he's working with, you know, a lot of inexperienced actors on his sets. I just think that he is someone who really, he wears his beliefs so publicly and he really does ride for them. And I love it. I think he's doing great things for indie filmmaking, and to see him win is just like monumental. But I was watching an interview with him where he was talking about how he does everything. He's the director, the writer, the editor, the producer. And he was saying something about how like he hoped it didn't come off as him, you know, being overbearing or too controlling. It was just like part of the process for him. Part of the process of his movies is having his hand, you know, a big part of the whole thing start to finish, and how he does a lot of like the building of his movie in the editing room. And when I went to film school, editing has always been my favorite thing to do. Editing is my favorite part of the process. And I am also someone who has always felt like my projects come together in editing. I will write things. I will film things. I won't start to get really like amped up and excited like this is all coming together. It's fucking awesome. I like see it until I get into the editing room, because so much of it is changed in editing, and so much of it is like trial and error in editing. And I just feel like it's something that other editors understand. And so I guess there's a part of me that felt like, oh damn, it's really cool to see a director that I love, who I've enjoyed every single movie of, say something that I really resonate with deeply. And also I think it hit me because I feel like I felt really guilty for being the kind of person that wants to do it all. I feel like I have made to feel some type of shame, and this is connected to like my too muchness, my like need to do everything and be a part of everything. I think I've been made to believe that this was like a bad part of myself, or like it's a part of myself that longs for control and perfectionism. And I kind of loved hearing Sean Baker reframe it for me and be like, it's actually not like that. It's not about control or being overbearing or about perfectionism. It is just part of the process for me. And it was funny because it was one of those moments where I heard him say it and I'm like, yeah, that's how I feel. But I'd been made to feel like that was a wrong way for me to feel. Like, is this some kind of shame that I took on as a woman that maybe a man wouldn't have taken on because it wasn't pushed on him as much? I don't know. It triggered some reflections in me where I just loved what he said. He's like, it's not like that. It's just like this. It's part of it for me. It's part of the process. Part of what makes this so enjoyable and makes the creating so much more like fun and fulfilling is to have a part in all of it, especially the editing. And that is exactly how I feel. I just have like a deep, deep admiration for him and his work and what he stands for. And I just was so happy to see a movie like Anora win Best Picture. God, how did we get so fucking lucky? Now, Anora was a movie that was incredibly well received and really well liked. I don't know anybody who disliked Anora personally. I am personally surrounded only by fellow Anora lovers. But I've seen some of the hate that Anora has gotten online, mostly because I like lurk on all these Oscar Reddit locations, which I understand this is like the butt crack of the internet that I'm hanging out in. So like, I don't know who these people are or how their brains work, but I've read some of the hate that people have for Anora, and I obviously disagree with most, if not all of it. But I think my biggest observation in reading a lot of the hate that people have for Anora is just like, I feel like people have forgotten that you can critique something without taking it to like the 11th degree and being like, because I hate this thing is bad and deserves to be banned. Like, some people really take criticism to such a strange place. But like, you can critique something without escalating it to a place of like, this thing is bad. This thing is morally bad and shouldn't exist because I personally hate it. Like, I think there was some really valid criticism within all of the intimacy coordinator discourse, but some people took it to a degree that was like, well, now you're losing me. If you don't know, basically there was some back and forth a couple months ago about Anora not using an intimacy coordinator on set because Mikey Madison did not want one. She said that she felt comfortable without one. The set was kept small. It's just Sean Baker and his wife, who is a producer, Samantha Kwan. That was the choice that was made. Everyone on set was comfortable with it. Everything went well. It was totally fine. It worked out. However, do I think that there is criticism to be made there in saying, like, I believe that intimacy coordinators should be a requirement on movies that handle subjects like that? Yes, I think that's a fair criticism, and it's one that I agree with, actually. I also believe that intimacy coordinators should be a requirement. And also, I think that some of you might be shocked to learn that most of your favorite movies did not use intimacy coordinators. Like, the use of intimacy coordinators on movie sets is still relatively new. And I just think that a lot of you would be shocked to learn how many movies you have watched and loved did not use intimacy coordinators. I am all for like rallying to make this more of an industry standard and calling it out and being like, listen, I'm happy it went well. Thank God it went well. And also, it should be industry standard to have intimacy coordinators. It should be required on sets that handle these kind of subjects and that have scenes like Anora does. I can have that criticism and also be like, this movie is fucking awesome. I believe they should have had an intimacy coordinator. I believe it should be required to have one. And the movie was fantastic. And I think Sean Baker is an incredibly talented director. Like, I can hold all of these things to be true at the same time. I think it's a little strange to me when people can't critique something without taking it to the highest level, where they're like, I have a criticism for their lack of an intimacy coordinator, and therefore this movie is bad and it's toxic and you're morally bankrupt for liking it. I'm like, whoa. You know what I mean? And I feel like there is a lot of things that just, you take this one valid criticism and you blow it up to such a degree that nobody wants to hear what you're saying. And then I think totally separate from the intimacy coordinator discourse, there were some people that didn't like the second half of Anora. They didn't like how the movie ended, which granted, from a lot of what I read on Reddit, not to be this person, but I think we do have a media literacy problem and some of y'all just didn't get it. Some of y'all hate it simply because you did not know what was going on. But also, I do think that a lot of people, and I talked about this with Challengers too, like this is a problem that I've seen pop up multiple times recently. Feels like it's getting worse. But I think that there are a lot of people that have a real inability to engage with art that has like imperfect characters or uncomfortable situations. It was like when I told my parents to go watch Challengers and then they came out of the movie being like, I hated that movie. All the characters sucked. And it's like, you hated the movie because you didn't want to be besties with the characters. Like, that's not really a good critique, to be honest. And I feel like a lot of the criticism I saw for Anora felt similar in that regard, where I was like, okay. And also, I just think a lot of it is plain wrong. Like, one of my friends sent me a thread that someone made on Twitter, and I was like, holy fuck. Media literacy is actually like dead in a coffin with 57 nails in it as we speak. If someone watched this movie and that was their takeaway, it was like kind of crazy to me, some of the things that people were saying. But this is also kind of the beauty of it. You are supposed to walk away from movies all having different engagements with it, having different conclusions that you came to. I especially love movies with endings like Anora, where it's sort of up to the audience to pull it together in the end and you decide sort of what it all meant and what happens next and how it ends. I love when movies do that. Everyone's going to have a different reaction to them. I think some people just don't like movies that leave anything up to the audience. I think some people are like, they watch movies on baby mode, which also brings me to my last point, which is that I think some of y'all just don't like movies. I think some of y'all really want to watch movies on baby mode, and then you pick movies that you cannot watch on baby mode, and then you get mad when they're not baby moded. You know what I mean? Like, you're mad that you have to use your brain to like put together something in a movie, or that you have to work to understand an imperfect character or sit in an uncomfortable situation. Like, maybe you just don't like movies. Have we considered that one? But in conclusion, you don't have to like Anora. You don't have to like all the same movies that I like, or the same movies that, you know, the majority of us like even. If you look at all the love for Anora and you're like, you know what? I actually don't get that at all. I am a hater. I am a detractor. That is totally fine, queen. You do not have to like that movie. But I think I'm just growing frustrated of the very specific small group of people on the internet that critique something and then take it to a degree that is so unbelievable that it's like, you guys know that we can criticize things and also enjoy them. Did you guys not know that? Did you forget that you can like critique things that you also like? You're allowed to like it just because there are parts of it that you can critique. That is something that can happen. And you can criticize something and also dislike it without then being like, and anyone that likes it is morally bankrupt. Like, some of you need to fucking cool it. So anyways, I was really excited. So stoked to see one of my favorite movies of the year win Best Picture. So stoked to see Sean Baker, a director that I really admire and look up to, win at the Oscars. I still remember when I watched my first Sean Baker movie. It was Tangerine in college. One of my professors was talking about like how you didn't need the most expensive fancy equipment in order to make a compelling film because Tangerine was shot on an iPhone. And I went home and watched it and was obsessed. I've since watched almost all of Sean Baker's features and I've loved every single one. So I was so excited to see someone like him win. I think it means something fantastic for indie filmmaking. Mikey Madison is a force, an absolute fucking star, so deserving of her win. And I can't wait to see what she does next. Ah, Godspeed. So you know what? Do I agree with the Academy on everything? Did I agree with them on the nomination specifically? No, I did not. I disagreed with the Oscars a lot, actually. However, given the circumstances, where we ended up, who we ended up with, I was pretty happy with how everything shook out post-Oscars. I don't know. I feel like there were a lot of people that were like, 2024 was just like a bad year for movies. I didn't feel that way. Maybe I'm just a lover at the end of the day. No, I'm also a hater too, don't worry. But I was happy with it. I felt good. And now we're back on the grind. 2025 releases. See you next award season, I guess. Let's do a few audience submissions before throwing it on over to the post show on Patreon. Here's your reminder to join us over on the Patreon if you're dying for just a little bit more emotionally online and a little community to go along with it. For just $5 a month, you get an extra episode every single week and access to our Discord community. So if that sounds fun to you, come on down. Hello, Maddie. Recently, I had a discussion with a male friend who said straight men's sexuality is demonized. Some men are creepy, but men are more physical, and saying you like boobs and butts is natural. Oh my God. I had not been having the best day, so I wasn't really in the mood for this. So my response was about how in a culture where straight men are prioritized, you can feel like meat for the grinder, dissected down to your parts and for consumption, whether you like it or not. And that maybe if you're talking about someone specific that you have a two-way emotional connection to, it doesn't come across as creepy. I was thinking about this the next day. Is it only creepy when men do this? Is it not creepy when women do it because of the subversion? Does it depend on the feature? Like if you say you like elegant shoulders, is that okay, but not liking a big ass? Or is the very act of picking and choosing features creepy? I wonder what you think of this discussion. To say that straight men's sexuality is demonized is, honest to God, one of the funniest things I've heard in a long time. That is ridiculous. That is a ridiculous sentence. I'm sorry that you feel so fucking oppressed as a straight man. It must be so fucking hard to have it be not okay to make women uncomfortable with your weird, creepy advances about their physicality anymore. It must be so hard for you to keep it inside your weird brain. Also, I roll my eyes so hard. Like, the men are more physical. I actually, like, my whole body just goes, oh my God. Men have just been given the green light with objectification for so fucking long. And now that that's not okay, and women are like, actually, you fucking freak, you can't talk about me like that. It is weird. You are fucking weird. Suddenly they're like, oh, what the fuck? Biologically, men are just more physical. I literally physically have to say that I love someone's boobs and butt. Like, no, you don't. You're a weirdo freak. I don't know what to tell you. You are weird. You are weird. Ugh, my sexuality is being so demonized because I'm not allowed to say that this woman has beautiful knockers anymore. Like, I seriously need some of you to get a grip on reality. That is insane. So sorry. Hey, quick update. That's insane. Just so you know. And you were right to say what you said, that you can feel like meat for the grinder, dissected down to your parts for consumption, whether you like it or not. And exactly, if you're talking about someone specific that you have a two-way emotional connection to, it won't come off as creepy because it's consensual. But when you, a random man, are talking about a random woman and start objectifying her because you biologically need to talk about her boobs and butt, don't be surprised when people think you're fucking creepy. That is what happens. And let me just say, I don't think there's an apples to apples comparison here in the reversal. I think that, like, because of the culture, because of how men have been given the green light to objectify, and a lot of them feel like they are almost entitled to engaging in that objectification, I don't believe that there is a complete equivalent that you can do in, like, flipping it where it's like women to men. Is it only weird if men do it and not women? I don't think that there is an equivalent that women do. But for the record, yes, it still would be creepy if a woman was coming on heavily to a man that hadn't given any indication that he was into her about the outline of his penis and his fucking jeans. That is fucking weird too. Generally, it is weird to come on to someone so heavily and quite sexually without there being any indication that that is appropriate. I think that's generally, we can all get on board with that one. It's a little weird. And also, it's quite different to observe a feature that you might innocently think is beautiful or platonically think is beautiful. Oh, you have beautiful eyes. Your hair looks so good today. This outfit looks so good on you. You have great style. It's one thing to observe these features and traits in someone that you just think are awesome and beautiful, nice to look at. It brings out, you know, the best in them. It's one thing to acknowledge things like that, and it's another thing to, like, make advances at someone. Like, it's one thing if someone says, you have such big, beautiful eyes, and it's another thing if someone says, you have such great blowjob eyes, right? Really different things, despite the fact that they're complimenting the same feature. It's different. We all know what the difference is between complimenting someone because you're being kind and complimenting someone because you're being a freak and you're sexualizing the fuck out of them. We all know the difference between objectification and a compliment. The same way we know the difference between catcalling and a compliment. Like, these things have very different energies, despite the fact that they might be saying similar things or come to the similar root. Like, it's a different beast if a man that I've been on 3 dates with and I'm clearly into is like, you are so beautiful, I'm in love with your body, versus a man that I'm walking past on the street who I've never seen before looks at me up and down, licks his lips, and is like, I love your body, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Like, context matters. Who is saying it matters. Why they're saying it matters. Why they feel comfortable saying it matters. Because some people should feel comfortable saying it. People that I've been on dates with that I'm clearly interested in. I hope they feel comfortable complimenting me and, like, coming on to me because I fucking want them to, right? But this man who took one look at me for 5 seconds and then felt entitled to that kind of intimate interaction with me, that's fucking weird. That's an entitlement to women and their bodies, regardless of whether or not they're comfortable with it, that is fucking weird. And I just think that any man at this point, any adult man that pretends to like feign ignorance on this shit and act like he doesn't know the difference between complimenting someone and being normal and objectifying someone, to sit there and be like, straight men's sexuality is demonized, and act like a fucking idiot about all of it at this age is like, all right. We got to just get away from men like that. I fear that we just need to get away. Like, when high schoolers say shit like that, it's one thing. When grown adult men do, it's a red flag. Hope this helps. Hi, Maddie. So I wrote to you about a year ago about catching my boyfriend looking at bikini pictures of our friends, screenshotted from social media and zoomed in. It's okay if you don't remember, but basically I did end up staying in the relationship, committed to making this work. And things seemingly were going okay, with communication being key. Well, one shameful night, bad decisions were made, having stayed a bit too late, smoking a bit too much. A few weeks before the group beach trip, my boyfriend and our friend had started to hook up in my apartment. Stopping halfway, seemingly realizing how wrong this is. Meanwhile, I was back in my hometown, I shit you not, helping my mother recover from her cancer-related hysterectomy surgery. We go on to have the trip, which I was so excited, looking forward to normalcy after everything going on. I even made this whole beach trip video to music and called it The Best People I Know. Turns out they all knew about the betrayal. I only found out a few months later after the beach trip by a mutual that had recently entered a relationship with said friend. She confessed to him her shameful hookup with my boyfriend and that she was planning to tell me, but the timing was never right. And apparently, writing me a letter of confession, the letter never came, now faced with the betrayal itself and the betrayal of the secretive way everyone knew but me, it was all too much. We're 3 months in now and countless weeks in couples therapy together, draining all my extra income. I still have no idea how I feel other than so incredibly hurt and ashamed almost. Am I really such a people pleaser that I let myself get hurt in this colossal way and I'm still trying to make it work? Who knows if my trust will be broken again or if I can ever feel safe in this relationship. I just don't know what to do. I do remember your submission, and more of it is coming back to me now. And I remember this one because I was very disturbed by it after the fact, because to me it was so much more than just a disrespect for you. It was also a disrespect for your friends, because to have photos of them zoomed in on and saved to his phone is like they didn't consent to that. And that's really strange and bizarre. So I am remembering more about this as it comes back to me. I imagine when you found those photos on his phone, you were just heartbroken. And I have a lot of empathy for like how challenging of an experience that can be. And maybe in the moment you're thinking to yourself, like, maybe I should walk away from this. Maybe I should leave. This is really bad, right? Obviously you came to me looking for advice, and I think you probably knew what I was going to say before I said it. But I think that sometimes it's all easier said than done, right? And you make the decision to stay with him, which I'm not going to judge you for. Because sometimes we got to be bit twice in order to see someone for who they truly are. But past that point, when you chose to forgive him for the photos, which was a big act of forgiveness, that wasn't a small thing. And I hope he didn't make you feel like it wasn't a big deal. What he did, it was a big deal. And you forgiving him was a big leap of faith that you were doing. You were offering him a big, you know, big bit of forgiveness there that he, in my opinion, wasn't deserving of. You were doing him a solid. And he, in the face of that, decided to cheat on you with one of your friends. And it doesn't matter that they started and stopped. That literally means nothing to me. He cheated on you. And that is unacceptable, disrespectful, and continues to reinforce what you learned about him the first time. So now you have two examples. It wasn't just a fluke. It wasn't just a mistake. We have two examples of this kind of behavior from him. And I know how hard it is to walk away from someone that you love, that you want to just close your eyes and ears and be like, this didn't happen. We can get through this. I can forgive him for it. But this is now multiple examples of this kind of behavior and this kind of betrayal, I would be really worried if you chose to stay with him past this point. I think you have learned something valuable about the person that you are with. And I think if I were you, I would ask yourself why it is that you think this is the kind of love you deserve. Don't you think that you are deserving of someone who treats you better than this? Who is more respectful to you? Who values your love and companionship and relationship? Someone that doesn't objectify your friend's beach photos? Someone who doesn't make you feel the way that you feel right now? I think a lot of times women are made to feel like they are required to like fight for their relationships and make it work and just get through it. And I'm here to tell you that you don't need to do that. And that you don't need to forgive him. And you don't need to get past this. And you don't need to drain your bank account on couples therapy for a man who has now proven to you twice that he is okay with disrespecting you. Don't let him do it a third time. If you want my advice, don't let him do it a third time. You were forgiving the first time. You gave him a second chance. I don't think you need to feel ashamed for that. I think it's a choice that a lot of us make when we are in love with someone. All right? Even if all the evidence is looking at us in the face and we're like, yeah, I know it's bad, but I'm still going to go back to him. I'm still going to forgive him. Most people can relate to doing that at least once in their life. I don't think it's something you need to feel ashamed about. I don't think it's something you need to feel guilty about. But I do think it's something that you can learn from. I do think it's something that should bring up questions for you now that it's happened a second time. The first time you reacted with forgiveness, you worked through it, got to the other side, whatever, okay? Now he does it a second time. And this time it's not just screenshots on his phone, but he's actually physically cheating on you. Why do you think you are deserving of a relationship like this? Do you not believe that you could be in a relationship with someone who would never do this to you? Because you absolutely can be, and it doesn't have to be like this. Sometimes we compromise our self-worth in pursuit of love. We accept disrespect that we probably wouldn't accept from any other person because we have internalized some deeper belief about ourselves and what kind of love we are deserving of. To forgive him a second time, to give him a third chance, I think would be a mistake. I don't think that people should have that many chances to disrespect you. I don't think we need to kill ourselves to keep relationships afloat that we aren't the ones trying to sink. You just deserve more than this. You deserve more than it. I don't think it's worth fighting for. I think that he has shown you who he is, and now it's up to you to believe it. And that's going to be really hard, but you are capable of it. And you are deserving of a lot more than this. And I send you nothing but love and strength on this journey of figuring out what comes next. So that's where I'm going to end it for today's episode. I'm going to throw it on over to the post show, where we are going to be talking about mismatched passion, being in an era of discovery, as frustrating as that may be, and, you know, outgrowing the things that used to fit and sort of embracing the art of a good pivot. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, come on over to Patreon and hang out with us a little bit extra. And if not, I'll see you guys next week. What the heck? Listen to Mayhem. Support Lady Gaga. Love you so much. I'll see you next week.